Hello, and welcome to Crime Theories Off the Record, a podcast series where I explain my interpretation of criminological theories behind the why, when, and where people misbehave. This is your host, Karen. Hello, everyone. Break's over, and I'm excited to be back with this new episode in which I will discuss peacemaking criminology. Off the record, if you're a new listener, feel free to hear any of our past episodes, and thank you for joining us in understanding the why, when, and where people misbehave. For those not familiar with Queenie's work, please refer to our previous episode. For nothing exemplifies how the context of time conditions the development of criminological theory so clearly as the evolution in the thinking of Queenie, especially as he moved into the more recent phases of his theorizing. As he made clear, Queenie moved through the various epistemologies and ontologies in the social sciences, always finding that another approach was necessary for incorporating what was excluded from the former and so on. Trying to keep his work informed by the latest developments in the philosophy of science, off the record, this is precisely how we ended up learning from other fields and adding to specific areas with knowledge. Queenie made it clear that this search has been conditioned by the social and intellectual changes that are taking place in the larger society. Outside of criminology and sociology. As it should, he eventually joined and led those who stress an approach to social conflict reminiscent of Gandhi. But before I jump into it, I would like to remind everyone that I am not an expert in every aspect of my field, but I have researched the topic. Instead of following the Marxist path that calls for a revolutionary overthrow of capitalism, Queenie embraced the peacemaking approach that tries to accommodate conflict through various means of conflict resolution, such as moral suasion and informal negotiation. It is important to note that this approach, which is often is scorned as totally impractical by those who favor confrontation, actually may be much more effective in the long run. I know I have talked a lot about Dr. Richard Queenie's work, but to summarize in four stages, 1. Crime is not an objective quality of behavior, but a social construction of reality. The law, which is defined as criminal and which definition is applied to, is the result of social conflict between groups and the ability of those with more power to have their construction of reality enshrined into legal statuses. 2. Crime and control reflect capitalism and class interest. Law and the criminal justice system protect the existing order and, if necessary, oppress subordinate classes. In other words, capitalism breeds crimes of accommodation, such as street offenses, and resistance, such as terrorism, by the powerless and crimes of the government, such as police brutality, and crimes of economic domination, such as white-collar offenses, by ruling elites and their agents. And 3, although socialism material equality is part of the solution to the criminogenic forces inherent in capitalism, achieving through justice involves a prophetic understanding of reality that yields a religious social order. The sacred should be used to give meaning to our individual lives and to unmask features of the capitalist order that create estrangement and crime. Transforming society thus involves both material justice and consciousness, in which the search for the divine binds us together. 4. Crime is due to conflict and to the attempt to respond to one harm with another harm. For example, let's look at war. Conducting a war on crime will only increase crime and violence. Two wrongs do not make a right. Crime can be reduced by peacemaking methods, such as conflict resolution and restorative justice, that seek to end the cycle of harm and create a renewed sense of trust and community. Shifting our focus to peacemaking criminology, a critical criminology that became popular in the early 1990s that accepts the notion that conflict is at the root of crime. But it advocates a policy response that refuses to escalate this conflict in favor of policies of conciliation and mediation. According to Pepinsky, peacemaking is one of two ways of approaching social control, with the other being warmaking. Whereas warmaking leads to more and more distrust, as well as efforts to secure more and more power over the opponent or even to destroy the opponent, Peacemaking aims to build a trust and a sense of community. Although most associated with the tradition of conflict theory, it suggests that conflict can be best resolved by building social bonds among people, much as control theory stresses. This view is much more within the spiritual traditions of faith such as Christianity, as exemplified by groups such as the Quakers, Buddhism, as illustrated by the fact that Queenie became a practicing Buddhist, and the Hindu tradition embodied by Gandhi. It also has been placed within certain humanistic traditions so that conflict theorists who wish to stress the earlier, more humanistic side of Marx also can connect the Marxist tradition to peacemaking criminology. Off the record, this is not to be confused with the infancy of criminology, in which every crime is a sin, but not every sin is deemed a crime. As Pepinski 1999 pointed out, peacemaking criminology reflects the position of many marginalized people who realize that they cannot obtain their goals by overpowering the opposition. Thus, it is also has been seen as close to some aspects of feminist criminology and queer criminology, as well as different branches of critical criminology. Peacemaking criminology reflects an assumption that two wrongs do not make a right, or that a war on crime will only tend to make society itself more violent. Very sensitive to many issues raised by labeling theory, it represents an effort to step back from the alienating, competitive sense of the other as a stranger to recapture a sense of common humanity and mutual community. Although it stresses the development of social bonds, the bonds that it wishes to create run more profound than those suggested by much control theory. Off the record, if you are new to crime theories, this could be a good moment to pause and check out our episode on labeling theory and control theories. Pepinski 1999 pointed to Christie's 1981 observation that the more we come to know someone, the more we lose our capacity to inflict pain on that person. Peacemaking criminology also stresses that the more we know ourselves, especially the uglier side of ourselves, the less likely we are to project it onto others. In this view, the violence endemic in contemporary society is manifested by the homicide committed by the criminal, on the one hand, and the death penalty administered by the state on the other. Each expresses the same underlying set of social premises. The state's violence reflects the same underlying values as the violence of the criminal, a willingness to use violent means to deal with opposition. It is not surprising that peacemaking criminology focuses on developing means of building trust even in the midst of conflict, or that it stresses the construction of a social fabric of mutual love, respect, and concern. This leads to social policies such as the recent restorative justice movement. For those unfamiliar with restorative justice, check out our episode titled Off the Record, Restorative Justice, to learn more. But for those who just need a little refresher, restorative justice aims to reduce harm by restoring victims, the communities, and the offender from the damage a crime has caused. The role of the state is not to inflict more pain and to seek vengeance, but to create a context in which reconciliation can happen. Offenders must show accountability and personal responsibility, but they also should receive support, reintegration, and in some cases, forgiveness. This approach aims to do justice, but in ways that connect people, not separate them. As might be expected, peacemaking criminology has been strongly criticized for utopian thinking and suggesting that power can be countered by something other than power. Givens 1994 pointed out that the sorts of humanistic policies advocated by peacemaking criminologists have a long history in reformist criminology and that they have not developed a theory that could suggest how to achieve the more extensive structural changes necessary to build close human ties, spiritual understanding, and genuine caring within a large and inherently impersonal society. However, one does not have to accept radical conflict theory and peacemaking criminology to realize that it was so easy to be taken in by the assumptions of the times. This whole podcast can show how thinking about crime is intimately shaped by the nature of the social context. Complacency has no place in criminology. Both theories are anything but complacent, and that's why I love sharing them with all of you. Whatever their defects, criminological conflict theory and peacemaking criminology certainly have provided a reorientation and an increased sensitivity to issues previously overlooked or treated only in passing. Thank you for listening and choosing our podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're hearing from as we delve into more criminological theories. And don't forget to tune in to our next episode, Off the Record. If you need help visualizing crime theories or only have a few moments to review, feel free to visit and follow us on Instagram at ct.offtherecord.